Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today my guest is Michael Flannery, Professor Emeritus of the University of Alabama at Birmingham. He holds degrees in library science and history, and has written and taught extensively on the history of medicine and science. His most recent research interest has been on the co-discoverer of natural selection, Alfred Russel Wallace. He is author of the 2011 biography, Alfred Russel Wallace, A Rediscovered Life, published by Discovery Institute Press. Mike, thanks for joining me on the program.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, today we're not going to talk about Wallace, per se, although we are going to talk about and pay tribute to historian Gertrude Himmelfarb, who died at 97 in late December 2019. For those following the evolution debate, her magnum opus remains the book that she wrote called Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution, first published in 1959, revised in 62, and not only is it still in print today, but it's available online. Throughout her writing career, Dr. Himmelfarb was devoted to careful investigations of Victorian society, morals and virtues, as exemplified in certain eras, and important figures such as Edmund Burke, Oliver Cromwell, Winston Churchill, George Eliot, and others. Himmelfarb retained her ability to write perceptively and compassionately about people and issues that matter to her. So Mike, you recently wrote about Dr. Himmelfarb at Evolution News, and back in 2009, you wrote a complimentary review of her book, Critiquing Darwinian Theory. At that time, it was under fire by a few people, and you were basically defending the work and its strengths. So we thought it fitting to ask you a few questions about the legacy of this notable historian. How does Himmelfarb's Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution fit into a larger and longer historiography of Darwin's studies?
Well, I think to understand the importance of Dr. Himmelfarb's work, you have to back up a little bit and understand that the history of modern biology has been written by the victors, which means it's a story largely crafted by committed Darwinists. Now, its first great expression came with Darwin and Modern Science, which was a collection of commemorative essays published in 1909 and edited by the British botanist Albert Seward. And it consisted of 29 articles of the wonders of Darwinian theories told by his devoted followers. And like I said, it was published back in 1909. Now, supposedly, Darwinian theory was in deep trouble from about 1880 until the so-called modern synthesis developed in the 1930s and 40s. But I think this publication belies that commonly held argument. At any rate, the alleged eclipse of Darwinism is really part of a triumphalist narrative largely told by Julian Huxley, who is Thomas Henry Huxley's grandson, and Harvard biologist Ernst Mayr. Now, according to this tale, Darwinism was in serious decline until certain researchers combined modern genetics, Darwin's theory of common descent by means of natural selection, rescuing from a certain demise, you know, sort of the cavalry riding to the rescue of the damsel in distress, as it were. And some of the leading players were Ronald Fisher, with his 1930 book, The Genetical Theory of Natural Selection, Theodosius Dobzhansky, Genetics of the Origin of Species, 1937, Julian Huxley's Evolution, A Modern Synthesis, 1942, and then that same year, Ernst Mayr's Systematics and the Origin of Species. It was all capped off by David Lack's 1947 Darwin's Finches. So with this under their belt, by 1959, nothing seemed more secure than Darwin's theory. It was being portrayed as irrefutable, you know, as on par with gravity, for heaven's sake. In that year, of course, the centennial of Darwin's Origin of Species was celebrated by a huge conference at the University of Chicago. This was in November of 1959. It drew something like 2,500 participants. There were 250 delegates from almost 200 different colleges. Many of the synthesizers of the modern neo-Darwinian evolution were there, people I've already mentioned like Dobzhansky and Mayr and Huxley. So with that as background, in 1959, here comes this 37-year-old graduate, by the way, from the same school, University of Chicago, to stand up to these guys and basically say the emperor wears no clothes. It was a real punch in the face, and historiographically, the only other person to have guts enough to question this secular creation story, really, was Jacques Bourson and his Darwin, Marx, and Wagner Critique of a Heritage that was published back in 1941. So really, these were the two lone voices questioning the merits of Darwinian theory, at least by historians anyway. And I would say that that's how it fits into historiography. In that sense, it was a seminal work, and it really was the beginning of at least a still small voice of protest against what was being hailed as irrefutable.
Huh, very interesting. And I like how you remind us that history is often written by the victors, and it's no different when it comes to certain dogmas and theories that are still in the common understanding today, or was back then. So it took a lot of guts to put this out, in other words.
It did, especially a young graduate, fairly fresh out of graduate school, to come up with something like this is, I would say, pretty gutsy.
Wow. So what makes this book, then, so special or unique?
Well, the boldness of the book, along with its careful precision, is really what sets it apart. Dr. Himmelfarb has great insights that I think really still stand today. One I mentioned in my recent tribute to her in the Evolution News that you mentioned. She says, for example, that Darwin usually engaged in a kind of rhetorical sleight of hand where, and I quote here, possibilities were promoted into probabilities and probabilities into certainties, so ignorance itself was raised to a position only once removed from certain knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty perceptive. And I don't know where anyone had ever quite pointed that out before in such a direct and bold manner. And I think it's phrases like that, comments like that, and the book is peppered with these kinds of observations that make that book so special.
Yeah. So standing up to the Darwinian paradigm long before it was trendy. We're hoping it's trendy nowadays.
Yeah.
So what was Himmelfarb's key point in that book then?
The key point or the thesis of her book really isn't stated until the end, where in the last chapter she titles The Conservative Revolution. After a long and careful analysis of the theory and the times in which Darwin lived, and by the way, Victorian England was her specialty, where she states that Darwin, dramatizing and bringing to a climax the ideas, sentiments, and conjectures of his age, may be thought of as the hero of a conservative revolution. Now, what is she talking about? He was conservative in the sense that his theory merely underwrote the laissez-faire capitalism of a nation at the height of its industrial revolution. Survival of the fittest, nature read in tooth and claw. This was really the zeitgeist of the age. When the German historian, by the way, Oswald Spengler, read Origin of the Species, he said it reeked of the English factory. And I think that's largely what she meant. It confirmed unrestrained competition and industrial expansion and growth. It was revolutionary because now, for the first time, we supposedly had a scientific, and I'll put that in scare quotes, a scientific theory to substantiate all the things common to Victorian society, the triumph of ingenuity, of science, and of the class system itself. So success could be redefined in terms of fitness, and so could failure. So class system was, under Darwinian principles, simply nature's way. And so it was a revolution, but it was a decidedly conservative one.
Well, Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution was published in 1959, as you say, and then revised in 1962. Now, that's a while back today. So how has it stood up to the test of time?
Well, I think it stood up very well. Much of what Himmelfarb says is true today. I think her analysis of the logical weaknesses of the theory are still true enough. Also, her honest portrayal of Darwin's own poor scholarship on a range of issues, not the least of which was the question of morality. For example, I'll give you another quote here directly from her book. She says, "Paying homage to the many writers of consummate ability who had applied themselves to the problem of morality, Darwin appended a list, not compiled by him, of 26 British philosophers whose names he felt assured would be familiar to all his readers and that are today quite assuredly entirely unknown. It is difficult to take seriously a discussion that had as its most frequently cited moralist and philosopher, the historian William Lecky. So she's pointing out here that Darwin's scholarship was not as sharp and as insightful as many give him credit for. And she's the only historian I know of who actually impugned Darwin's scholarship in this way, at least until Paul Johnson's Darwin Portrait of a Genius came out in 2012. And he uses genius in his title in a pretty tongue-in-cheek way. So I think in that sense, it stood the test of time, and that makes it an important book.
So what are the book's strengths and weaknesses? Or put a little differently, if you could change anything about Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution, what would it be?
It's important to recognize that Himmelfarb was writing long before Darwin's private notebooks had been published, even before some of them had even been discovered. So that didn't happen until Paul Barrett, Sandra Herbert, and some others organized and edited them and published them in 1987. Now, the fact that so much of her analysis is still accurate, even uniquely insightful, I think is really a tribute to her intellect. But that said, I do think her chapter on Darwinism, religion, and morality would have been strengthened by having those notebooks available. She seems to accept Darwin's agnosticism, or at least his equivocation on the issue of religion and faith. But I think really Maurice Mandelbaum was closer to the truth in calling Darwin an undogmatic atheist. Mandelbaum published this in an interesting article titled Darwin's Religious Views, back in 1958. And I wish she had incorporated that into her book, which she seemed to have missed. But I also think that Darwin's notebooks would have revealed the depth of Darwin's inherent distaste for religion and religious thinking. And I also think she misunderstood Thomas Huxley on ethics. There's been significant work done on Huxley since then. She seems to argue that Huxley's essay on evolution and ethics was a humanistic statement against the use of the authority of science to justify a specific social ethic or policy, when in fact, I think it could be, you know, revised to say he was really using that essay to push for his own particular social programs and his own particular political views as against the more radical views of, say, Alfred Russel Wallace or Henry George. I think she missed that a little bit, but, you know, she's allowed to. She was one of the first to really apply a critical eye to Darwin's work.
Sure. Helping to blaze the trail for the rest of us here. Well, in closing, what do you think made Gertrude Himmelfarb so special as a historian?
Well, I would define her as careful, honest, and unafraid. And these are special qualities in a historian, and they came together in Gertrude Himmelfarb. She was known by her family as B, and she was married to the editor and author Irving Kristol, who he's even regarded as the godfather of neoconservatism. So her own conservatism could look at questions afresh, apart from the typical secular leftist inclinations of most academicians. And when she did, the results are often illuminating, even for those who might not agree. An example of that, besides Sir Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution, is a more recent book called The Moral Imagination, from Edmund Burke to Lionel Trilling, a very interesting book that came out in 2006. So I would recommend all of her work, and I would just say she was a very special talent and made some very special contributions to the field of history.
Well, Mike, thanks for taking the time out to talk with us about the legacy of Gertrude Himmelfarb. She's new to me, and it sounds like I definitely want to go back and read some of her work, especially the trailblazing book on Darwin. Well, you can find more of Michael's writing at Evolution News. Just run a search on his name there and you'll find articles of all kinds to enjoy. You can also get a copy of his books, including Alfred Russel Wallace, A Rediscovered Life, on Amazon. And he has a sequel to that, a follow-up, called Nature's Prophet, also available. Well, you can listen to other episodes of ID the Future anytime at idthefuture.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Andrew McDermott for ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.